Hey, you scruffy-looking nerf herders. Welcome to Records of the Republic, a podcast where we talk about all things Star Wars, from canon to the EU to Legends content and more. We are your hosts, Wade and Kevin, and we're going to make the jump to light speed as we try to tackle today's topic of conversation with you. Strap yourself in and don't get cocky as we embark on this journey together into the Star Wars universe.
Hello, Records of the Republic listeners. It is one of your hosts, Alex, with another quarter portion, Dylan. And today is Thursday, June 6th. It is 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I bring that up because the records team normally doesn't record in the afternoon. We're usually evening folks only, sometimes late into the evening. I know Wade might be on, you know, recording anytime in the night. He's certainly watching Star Wars at any time, but you know, we're rudderless today. No Wade Rudder. But like I said, I do have Dylan joining me, so let's reconnect.
Yeah, man. First things first, I want to shout out Kevin. We love you, and we miss you too. And I love your Boston takes, especially right now in the NBA Finals, because being that New England guy talking NBA Finals, and Alex can attest to, like, we've been texting about stuff. I think that's really fun. Mm-hmm. And then even secondly, with what you said, Wade has probably binged everything he can with all the Star Wars content. So shout out to our guys there. I am really excited to be here. I am glad that I am in the studio, if you will. And it is the middle of the day, which feels kind of weird because it's like when we record, like you said, when we record, it's usually nighttime. So it's really cool. Yeah, man, I'm doing really well. I'm actually at the office right now. I have found a nice secluded hole where apparently people are cleaning the windows. So if you hear stuff, I want to apologize in advance. But yeah, so I don't know. Big life updates, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. What do you got for us?
So this is even something I haven't told you guys in text, so you get to be the first person to know from the records team, but my wife and I are under contract on a house here in Virginia, and we're getting closer to the closing date.
Dude, I am so happy. So this is like a genuine reaction here. I didn't know what was going on with that. You had mentioned that in like the group text between Kevin, Wade, yourself, and me, and I feel like that was so long ago, man. Like, it had come up, but I didn't know what to say. Like, knowing how volatile the housing market is with inventory, I keep in touch with the news regarding like the broker stuff that's going on right now. Like, there's so much happening. I just had my fingers crossed, you know, the well wishes and everything. I am so, so happy for you and the family, man. That's awesome.
We're really excited about that. And to our listeners, the housing market's pretty rough. Like, I mean, Alex, you could probably test this from all your listening with other podcasts and other like news outlets, but finding a house in this market is excruciatingly frustrating, especially when you're just trying to make ends meet and also trying to make sure you have enough for a loan. But like, by some grace and miracle, we were able to find something. It's actually not too far from my job. It's about 30 minutes south. So if I could put this on a map, my wife and I live in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We're moving towards Richmond, Virginia.
Okay. Fredericksburg to Richmond. Very cool.
So basically middle of the state of Virginia. So we're really excited about it. And again, like, being in a house is going to make things so much simpler, because being in an apartment is... the time is done. It's not bad, but it's time to be done with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy you're getting in there, man. And yeah, you know, this, I'm hoping this is like the forever home, or
close to forever, baby. Close to forever.
Yeah. You know, Dylan, there was 2 episodes of The Acolyte, the newest Star Wars live action series. And, you know, this is kind of controversial in our Records of the Republic group chat, but I am the one member who hasn't watched any of it. I believe at the moment, you and Wade have both watched the episodes. Kevin has watched one of the 2 episodes. So, for myself, as well as any other viewers who haven't listened to the episode by the time this is published, you know, can you give us just a little spiel?
Well, Alex, let me start with this. First, I just want to say to whoever producer, director, or person at Disney is listening, can y'all not keep switching what day you're going to premiere stuff and then release stuff? I feel like sometimes it's Tuesday, sometimes it's Thursday, sometimes it's Wednesday. Is this just to keep us on our toes, or just to that this is when it works? Because it's like trying to keep up with it. I'm mildly infuriated. Mildly, not big deal, but mildly infuriated. So here's what I'll say about Acolyte. I like things that take away from the prequel, sequel, and original trilogies and talk backwards, as I've spoken on maybe a year and a half ago on the podcast. The Old Republic era is my favorite, period. And so for me, I wanted to jump right into Acolyte because I'm like, I know it's not Old Republic, it's High Republic, which I don't know a lot about, but because I know enough about Old Republic, I can kind of trek along with it. And I will say, I am glad I did just jump right into it and stick along with it, because I think, and Wade may disagree with me on this, it was kind of like a, you know how like a gasoline fire is immediate and a diesel fire is just slow to burn and get started, but once it goes, it goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the Acolyte, I like where you're going, okay.
The Acolyte is a diesel fire. And I won't say that it started slow in its first episode, per se. What I mean by that is it started with a really good pace. Like, things are kind of slow to start. Not everything's being revealed to us, but, like, answers are even getting answered in that first episode, just like the small questions. But it's giving you those little tastes of more. And then the second episode happens, and it ramps it up even slightly. There's a little bit more action. There's a little bit more, like, intensity of, oh, we need to figure out what's going on. It's, for the best that I can do to explain the Acolyte without spoiling anything for you, it's as if they took the great detective aspects of shows like CSI, Criminal Minds, and stuff like that, and put it in the Star Wars universe.
Interesting. All right, because mystery isn't really something we've gotten a lot of in the live action realm, and I think the closest to it that we've gotten that is going to jump to everyone's minds that's listening is maybe Attack of the Clones. You know, the Obi-Wan arc is certainly one of an investigation, and what is Kamino, where is Kamino, yada yada yada. But he doesn't have a team, he doesn't have like anyone to rely on, he doesn't have any help. So is that, you know, do you kind of get that feeling that, you know, like a CSI, there's a little bit of an investigative team or more than one person kind of following up on, you know, yeah, the new threat?
No, yeah. So, like, I assume you know character names a little bit because of some backstory, or do you know nothing at all before I continue?
No, I got a couple character names down. Like, I know there's a Jedi Master Soul who's sort of, like, leading the marketing. And I've seen a couple other images, so yeah, I'm a little familiar.
Okay, cool. So if I jump into it, you'll know slightly what I'm talking about, but not enough to spoil.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So Master Soul is basically the one who has trained, what's her name? Osha is this character's name. And to make this long story short, he is basically the one to task, okay, well, a Jedi got murdered, and he was murdered by some mysterious figure, and we want to send you to do it. So he takes his Padawan with him. I forgot her name right now. It's the girl who played X-23 in Old Man Logan, is the actress. I'm forgetting her name. But then he also gets this Jedi by the name of Yord, who's a Jedi Knight. And Yord is the person who actually brought the suspect in. And the suspect escapes. The reason I'm saying the suspect, which I don't want to spoil anything, but the suspect runs away. And so the three of them are looking for it. They find the suspect, and Soul has like this very Qui-Gon-esque mentality and temperament. And it's like, I trust the suspect. We need their help. So we're going to trust them and let them help us. So he's kind of slowly developing this team that's hoping to solve the mystery of who's killing the Jedi. Like, who is assassinating these Jedi? And so it is. It's a team-based who's who, what's going on. And Saul is kind of like your, what's the best example? He's your head of the group. He's the NCIS. He's the guy who's like, okay, I've put the team together. Let's find this.
All right. I like that. I especially like it because as you're describing it, it reminds me of the Scholastic series of books, the Jedi Apprentice or Jedi Adventures, Jedi Quest, all those books that were coming out like around the prequel trilogy, you know? Yeah. Especially those that I think it was like the Jedi Adventures that or Jedi Apprentice that tackled like really young Obi-Wan, you know, prior to the Clone Wars canon being changed a little bit and everything else coming on later. But yeah, that reminds me of that era. So, you know, I'm going to turn it on. This is the thing. I think I have a free afternoon, a free evening beyond
just
the
watch
NBA
one.
Finals.
Just watch one. You don't have to watch both. Just watch the one. Give yourself an opinion and either say, you know what, I'm going to wait until they're all out and binge, or say, no, this has piqued my interest. I'm going to watch it again. Right?
All right. All right. That's fair. That's fair. I think because there's two, that's the option I have. Whereas if there was just one episode, I would feel like it's a bit of a tall task to go in just for fear of being disappointed and wanting that next episode, but not having it, you know, because I'm being a little selfish. I'm enjoying the fact that it will all be available in just like a month and a half.
Right. And I'll segue just a little bit. That's kind of what I did with Bad Batch, honestly. Like, I had to basically binge it. Part of that was just time, and the other part of that was just like season 3 was wonderful, but I just wanted to give myself 3 or 4, even 5 episodes that I could watch in succession rather than keeping it an episode a week because of how action-packed it was. And I'm actually glad I did it that way.
Okay. All right. Well, listeners, I mean, you heard it here first, because not even Wade knows this. Wade thinks I'm waiting this whole season to
watch
it.
Wade thinks you're a bum for this, honestly.
Yeah, Wade might... Here's the thing. I might not be able to re-engage the group chat unless I take a picture of the credits or a video of like the credits rolling from the first episode. So that may be like my homework after we're done recording.
That's right.
You mentioned segues, so let's just get into it, man. Star Wars video game. Dylan, what console was like the first that you played a Star Wars video game on, and what do you have at your disposal these days that you're playing games on?
That's good. So for me, when I remember, man, my first time playing a Star Wars game, I think it had to have been either a Sega, or maybe that's too far back. Now I'm trying to remember. I think for me, actually, console-wise, it was... I don't count it as a console, but it was PC, actually. I played Jedi Starfighter with my brother growing up. So that was like the first game and first console, quote unquote. PC's not a console, but it is the greatest console, if you know what I mean. But the first actual console, I remember my father for Christmas got my brother and I an Xbox, and he came home with a Star Wars game. I was like, what is this Star Wars game that you bought? This does not look fun. And it ended up being one of my favorite Star Wars games. That game is Knights of the Old Republic.
Wow.
Yeah. So he came home with this game. He's like, yeah, this Star Wars game, apparently it just came out and it was in a bundle with the Xbox. So I got it. And I'm like, this game looks like it's garbage. And I remember putting it in and I couldn't stop. It was so good. But yeah, so like, that's really... I stuck to Xbox for a long time. I was always jealous of the PlayStation because I felt like they did a better job with, like, from a video game overarching standpoint, not even just Star Wars. They did better with, like, the individual storytelling games, whereas Xbox was all about play online. You got to play people online, like Halo, Call of Duty, and all that. So I kind of stuck with Xbox. I did PC, and then I got to a point where I was really just playing mobile. So I played Galaxy of Heroes for a little bit. Personally, I think it's a pay-to-win system and is boring. Sorry, Galaxy of Heroes and Disney. Hate that for you, but that's what it is. And for me, I actually just started playing the Star Wars Hunters game. It's actually pretty cool. It's not as addicting as I thought it was going to be, so that's part of why I've kept it. And it's one of those I can turn it on, play a match, and be done. But I just say, man, from a console standpoint, and even like a mobile standpoint, like Star Wars, we're spoiled with Star Wars games. And I say that graciously, but I say that honestly. Like, I think we have so much Star Wars to pick from. It's really exciting. And I think I mentioned this the last time we recorded. Again, rest in peace, Riverside. But I found a way to emulate games on my phone. So I'm pulling like Battlefront, Battlefront 2, the Old Republic games, Episode 3, and so many other games I used to play growing up that are now just accessible on my phone.
Yeah, well, describe that a little bit, because you've mentioned the emulator in your text messages, you know, to the group. And from a very layman's understanding, it sounds like what they're able to do is to take those games from like our childhood, those teenage year games of ours that were a little more rudimentary with the controls, and kind of port that over to the phone that could take advantage of those more limited controls. Whereas maybe you wouldn't get like a Jedi Survivor emulated onto the phone. Is that like a pretty decent understanding?
So with the emulator, it really, so there's two sides to it. The first is for actual apps, like if you go to an app store of either your Apple or your Android phone and you look for Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2, they have transitioned those games through a company called Aspyr to be accessible for the mobile. So it's all the things you could have done on the PC. It's all the things you could have done on the console version. And they've transitioned it to a mobile format. So, like, I use basically, like, if I pulled up Knights of the Old Republic right now, I could play with my phone and I wouldn't need a controller, and I could move around with my fingers and click on stuff. But with the emulator specifically, so I can go and look for a ROM, right, for the game. I can download it to my phone, and then I have to take the zip file and extract specific files. And by the way, before anyone tries to say this isn't legal, it is. That's because I have ownership of the certain like games and archives, which is why I'm able to do this. So no one come after me, please. But you extract the files, you have an emulator app or system. So I have one that's called Dolphin Emulator, and it does most GameCube and Wii and Game Boy games. And so on that catalog, I have Star Wars The Clone Wars, I have Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, and it's the original game. And so the only thing I have to do then is my phone just becomes the console. And if I wanted to, my phone becomes the middleman. I would put my phone to a TV and use an HDMI cable, and it would be the screen. And then I could plug in, or not just plug in, I could Bluetooth a controller to my phone. So it sounds like a lot of steps, and you're probably like, dude, you do all this from time to time. But I take a controller that I've bought, I Bluetooth it to my phone, and then I can play the original game. So I can play Battlefront 2 on my phone, and I can put it on my screen, and I never had to spend any money for the new and updated version, and I can still play. Now, I don't get to play online, unfortunately, but I have all original access.
Right. You have the experience that someone like me, someone who's more passively playing games, someone who's not doing the online multiplayer gaming experience, you're capturing sort of like that inefficiency, because there are probably people like myself who went and purchased that, that game pack that came out earlier this year only to play it themselves, not really to connect online and to have that experience, whereas all they needed was the emulator, it sounds like. Yeah, you know, you kind of warned that it might sound complicated, but no, it really doesn't. It sounds rather intuitive, honestly.
It probably took me an afternoon to teach myself, if I'm honest. Like, I remember just being, it was a Saturday, and then I just thought, you know what? I bet I can find these old games if I start looking. And I thought, what's the best emulator? I read articles. I was saying, which one's going to be more adaptive for your Android? Because I will say this too, for our iPhone users who listen, it's not impossible. It's slightly more difficult, but Apple does have a couple apps that will emulate. Android just has less, I would say, security measures, if you will, that you don't have to jump through, whereas Apple has a couple more security features that you have to jump through. But yeah, it's really one of those where if you have a zip file extractor, if you have a way to search all those files that isn't generically on your phone, and what I mean by generically, like, don't use the file app that your phone gives you. It does all the basic stuff. Get like a zip file extractor. And then you can take the file, you put it into a system, and you play it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you mentioned KOTOR. You mentioned, what was the other game that you mentioned? You mentioned the OG Battlefront. So those are definitely like those early 2000s games. So, you know, tell me, where were you with your Star Wars fandom? Like, were you kind of actively engaging with, obviously, like the prequel movies, and like you were in it, so the games were a bonus? Or were the games sort of like what pushed you back into Star Wars?
I would say that I was so entrenched in Star Wars that anything that came out, whether it was an action figure toy or the movies or a video game or whatever it was, I was on it. So I was sold. I was bought in the moment I sat in a theater in 1999 and I watched as Darth Maul ignited both sides of his lightsabers and cried. Happy tears.
You were in. You were done.
I was in. Like, they didn't need to convince me. I was on the train, right? So, like we kind of already talked about, the way I did gaming was I really primarily did single player. I was more focused on single player. I like just kind of playing by myself. And I will say, I didn't play all of the Star Wars games. Like, there are certain games I never got the chance to play. Like, one listed here that I've only played once or twice but didn't get to play growing up was Bounty Hunter, which really focused on Jango Fett and his time between, I think it's right as Dooku is hiring him before all the Kamino stuff, but it's also in between some of that stuff with Geonosis. So I never actually got to play that growing up, but it looked really fun as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were certain games I missed out on, but there were other games such as The Force Unleashed and so on that came out, and I'm like, this is amazing. So fond memory moment. I remember... Actually, let me do it this way. Do you remember as a kid when a video game would come out, they had a website dedicated to the game?
Well, I don't recall that, but I was thinking of the gaming guides, like the hard copy
I had those
physical
too.
Books. Yeah, so I was certainly thinking about like how we'd have to reserve a game and pick up the game in store, but the game website, talk about that a little bit.
So the gaming websites, and then I'll transition to the books because I love the books too, and I assume you had some of those books growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So with the websites, so I remember pretty adamantly it was either 04, 05, if I remembered, where Revenge of the Sith came out. Star Wars Revenge of the Sith had its own like video game website. And you could go on there and it gave you basic information without spoiling anything. It's like you get to either play as Anakin or Obi-Wan, and it would have sections where it's like, here's a trailer, here's a gameplay video, here's some of the extra features that you could do. And before you play the game, you're like, wow, this looks awesome and this looks great. And it showed you like move sets and others. And what I found fun is once I got the game, played it, beat it, and went back, you could see on the website there were certain things that after you played it and go back, it's like, oh, that was actually at the end of the game. Oh, that was in the middle of the game. And I kind of did that part of it where I would go back to the website and I would go, wow, this is cool. Another game that did that was The Force Unleashed. So whoever was on the marketing team for Force Unleashed, I don't know if you're listening, but you killed it. You crushed it. Because if it wasn't a trailer, it was a gameplay video. If it wasn't a gameplay video, it was like, here are all the things you can do. Like, they worked their butts off on that game. And they did a great job marketing.
It was also as simple as concept art. I now that you're saying it, I do remember like the concept art for that game. So I remember the image of, you know, the Starkiller character or the character that would become Starkiller in like the foreground and the background being the Star Destroyer coming down to, I think, like the surface Coruscant. But yeah. I remember that because that's what they wanted to evoke. They wanted the gamer to think or to know, like, we're doing this. That's what you're going to have the ability to do. It's going to be the jumping on top of Rancors. It's going to be all of that. I definitely recall that.
Right. And I will say, too, something that I think the Force Unleashed especially drew me in on was they were giving us kind of the behind the scenes on the front. It wasn't like you had to earn the behind the scenes within the game, or they did. It's like with most movies, right? When you get the DVD, the physical copy, then you can go watch the bonus features and go watch behind the scenes. But they were marketing behind the scenes stuff. Like, I remember watching a video of Sam Witwer. He's talking about, yeah, like, this is how they did the game, and we did something that was super revolutionary. Like, the dots, they had to put the dots on our face, and it was cool because it wasn't like you just sat in a chair and they apply the dots and they're like, all right, now act. No, they wanted us to get up. They wanted us to move around. They wanted those bodily motions and stuff that can only be picked up when you have the dots on. And do you see how many companies use those dots now? Like, I'm not trying to say Force Unleashed revolutionized or even pioneered that system. But as a video game, I want to say they probably did. You know, like that motion capture that they were doing that with a video game is crazy to me.
Yeah. And whether it's the Force Unleashed or you want to even extrapolate it into the film industry and to think of the Lord of the Rings series from the early 2000s or Avatar or the newer Planet of the Apes films, it's like you can't help but credit each of those things with developing that performance capture technology into what it is today. You know, like you can take even Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, like a 2024 film that is leaning on that performance capture technology that, you know, truly it is the Force Unleashed. It is Lord of the Rings. It is the Apes. It is Avatar. It's, you know, those different projects simultaneously in the first decade of the 2000s that get us to where we are today, where all of a sudden Luke Skywalker can come out of the elevator in Mandalorian season 2 in the year 2021 and look the way that Mark Hamill did in 1980.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane. We don't get there without Sam Witwer. You know, isn't that interesting to think about?
It's again, you don't see it until you see it, right? It's pioneering.
Yeah.
So you get to look back and go, you guys did this. And now guys like Mark Hamill and got like Tarkin being in Rogue One and even Carrie Fisher, like where Sam Witwer crawled, those people are now walking and others are now running.
And another thing that I was thinking about just now, you mentioned, I think, what was it? Your father brought home like the Xbox and it came with KOTOR, right?
It came with KOTOR. It was a console exclusive. Like, you know how Xbox would do those bundles where if you buy these, if you buy the system, you get a game with it.
Mm-hmm.
It came with it.
So that was my experience with N64. Like, believe it or not, years prior to that, I believe it was, you know, Star Wars Episode One Racer. Like, that was an exclusive combo bundle that Nintendo was putting out with their system. You know, I'm convinced, I'm actually, I almost have to look it up to see if there was like an Episode One Racer and Mario Kart bundle of some sort or something. Cause I remember like those being the first games, but you know, that says a lot as well to imagine that these video game companies, like these console manufacturers, are also releasing their consoles with the Star Wars game. You know, I say that and let me kind of transition into another, you know, question of mine, but like, you kind of answered it already when I was thinking about where you were with Star Wars when that KOTOR game came home. So you were watching the prequels, you were in, you know, from 1999 forward, you're in with Star Wars. And for me, I gotta say, it's the same thing. I mean, Star Wars was always around when the prequels were rolling. I was rolling with the fandom. But definitely when I was considering this, I realized how video games gave us all a chance to interact with Star Wars in ways that books, comics, action figures, and like Lego couldn't do by themselves.
Correct.
Like with a book, I could open up Star Wars, I could hold it in my hand and I could see it, but that engagement was still limited to, you know, my head and my imagination. And with the Lego, again, like I could physically manipulate a few bricks and turn a pile of bricks into an X-Wing. And that same pile can be a snowspeeder, or it could be a rebel base, it could be anything. But a video game was truly that cross-section of taking, you know, the screen experience with the engaging, you know, tactile experience with the controller. I mean, I think us being, you know, a bunch of millennial kids, we really had such a unique and positive video game experience, being able to take something we saw on screen like Star Wars and literally engage with all those games as they were coming out back to back to back.
Yeah, I feel like Lego Star Wars really marketed itself well, but it also was definitely like that. It came out back to back to back. Like, right, the first one was just 1, 2, and 3. And then the next one was just 4, 5, and 6. And they're like, why don't we just combine these, right? And so we got the Complete Saga. And then we got the Clone Wars version. And then we got another version. And then it was like, oh, let's just put all 9 together and we'll make this mess. And it's like, you could keep making Lego Star Wars games and people will keep buying them. You know what I mean? Like, you could keep saying, like, I could be like, we're going to make a Lego Star Wars game, but it's only going to focus around Filoni's work.
Right. Yeah.
And it could be the Filoni saga. And you'd have the Clone Wars, Bad Batch. Like, and that could even be a DLC for the current game if they want to make even more money. But that's how good Lego games were. Like, Lego Star Wars games just brought people in.
Okay, so I think for me, my top 5 list, if the gun is to my head, I want to go with number 5 is the KOTOR series, and I'm going to put both of them as like an honorable mention number 5, and what that means is they could be 5 or 6 for me, and that's Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2. The playability, the ability to go back, and I could just replay them over and over again. There's so many different combinations of things you can do. There's so many different ways you can play that game. Light side, dark side. Do I want a yellow lightsaber? Do I want to be a green Jedi like with the counselor? Like, there's the amount of variety of choices and it doesn't feel super overwhelming and you continually do things different and it brings you back. So those are my 6-5. Number 4 is episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, because I don't know why, but I remember this being a complaint for a lot of people with the games from like the 2002 to 2010 timeline. But it was like, the combat's not different. It's just the same thing over and over again. I was like, you're right. It is. And it's awesome. Right? I could play as Obi-Wan Kenobi and I can destroy battle droids or destroy clones. And then I have to fight off against some of these bosses like General Grievous. Oh, and I get to be Anakin and fight Windu in a longer-ended battle. Like, there was just – the way they did that game was really good. And they had some extras in it that were nice. Number 3, Star Wars Battlefront. Actually, Battlefront 2 specifically. And I'm not talking Battlefront 2 of the 2010s. I'm talking Battlefront 2 of the 2000s. So – I don't know why, but I played that game. Oh, actually, I do remember why. Do you remember when you could do Galactic Conquests? It was the one where basically the map was set. You could either pick the Clone Wars era or the Empire era. And it was like, please select your fleet to command. And you would move to a planet. And you would move to a planet. And it was a massive board. And you played against the computer. But what you could do is your goal is to basically take over the galaxy, either as a good guy or a bad guy. And that's how you win. So it would be like my fleet would be, let's say I'm the clones, for example. I would set up and I would start at Kamino, but like planets like Megiddo or Kashyyyk or places like that would be under separatist control. And so there would be a clone ship and a separatist ship. And you had to keep fighting and earning territories. And what would keep the computer or you alive is you could always build a new fleet on a planet that you belong to. But once you owned everything, that was it and you won. Or if you lost everything, you lost. And so the amount of times I went back and played that either as the rebels, the Empire, the droids, or the clones was immense. Like, I played that over instant action, because with instant action, you pick a planet, you go play and have fun. That felt like it kept drawing me in because the story always changed. Like, oh, I want to be the Republic and I want to take over the galaxy for good and so on. So that's my number three for that reason. My number two is, so this one, I think when I did the podcast prior, I had a different number two and number one, but they often interchange with one another. But my number two is Republic Commando. So
okay,
Republic Commando is the chef's kiss of Star Wars games for me, because it took the great aspects of Halo, it took the great aspects of a first person shooter, and put it into a Star Wars world. And if you remember my statement before, where one crawls, another walks, and then another runs, Republic Commando crawled so that they could introduce clone commandos in things like Battlefront, in things mm-hmm. like Bad Batch and the Clone Wars, and like they created cool characters that we fell in love with because they had different personalities. Like, that's another thing I think about with that. Why do all the clones in Clone Wars have different personalities besides the fact that they're all like clones and they wanted to kind of do that? Maybe it was because Republic Commando had four literal twins of each other who all had different types and personalities. And then that gets incorporated into Clone Wars, and praise be to D. Bradley Baker for being able to sit in a studio by himself and play 30 different people. My last game, Star Wars The Force Unleashed, like we spoke about earlier. So that's my number one right now. I'm playing the PlayStation portable version of it on my phone, but I still have the Xbox version of it. And I don't know what it is, but I just... there's something about the complete and total carnage of things as someone as simple as Starkiller, which I think is more complex than we think. And I just wish that Star Wars will eventually bring him into the cinematic universe some way. But there's something about being able to toss a boulder at an AT-AT walker or at an AT-ST or whatever it is, and just absolutely just destroying it. And you're just this Jedi killing it. And it was just cool to have a game that seemed so revolutionary and so vital for Star Wars at that time, where basically we had a dry spell and hiatus of movies, right? Because we stopped with Revenge of the Sith, and then Lucas is like, there's no episode 7. And we're all like, well, then where do we go from here? And they're like, let's go to The Force Unleashed. And there it was.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right, because The Force Unleashed, that was a 2008 release, you know, unrelated to, you know, this conversation that we're having. I think I was looking up, you know, kind of what was happening for Star Wars year by year. And, you know, 2008 was that big, the Clone Wars movie year, the Clone Wars series year, and The Force Unleashed. So, I mean, you combine those two things together, that was certainly the next chapter of Star Wars beyond the films. You know, when Lucas was, you know, in air quotes, done with the films, you could really see, all right, I guess the future is this incredibly advanced Star Wars video game, as well as a Star Wars animated series, the likes of which we haven't seen for a franchise like this.
I know. It's just one of those things where I don't even know what words to say with it. It did something, and I think it was a launch pad for so many other things that it doesn't necessarily give the credit it's deserved. Same with Republic Commando.
Yeah, and I was just about to mention, the thing about The Force Unleashed especially, maybe a little more so than Republic Commando, or not, because where I'm going with this is I think about all the published materials, and I think about how there's, I believe, a Force Unleashed novelization for the first and the second game. Yeah. Along with those, there's the comic book adaptations for the Force Unleashed. I remembered there was some action figures. I know GameStop, through their Gaming Greats line, they've released a couple Black Series figures, as well as some Funko Pops. That's the Force Unleashed. And meanwhile, I know on the Republic Commando side of things, you have a 4 or 5 novel series from Karen Travis. And then beyond that, I know Karen did a couple other Star Wars books. I know one or two of them were clone focused still, and then one of them was a Mando focused story set in the New Jedi Order. But you had those books. And like you said, we have the Clone Wars series. We have the Bad Batch. You know, you have to at some point give a little credit to the video games for establishing a fervor, a fandom beyond the films, like for the clones, for something beyond the films.
Right. And I might get flack for this comment, but I think something as simple as even if you remember in what show, in Andor, right? Starkiller's mask when he turns into a Sith is like in the shop. That's not enough for me personally. Like, that's a cute little nod. Like, oh, cool. Look at that connection. No, that is not enough. I want a little bit more than just that. And I think Maruk, I forgot how to say his name, but you know what I'm saying. From Ahsoka, that being the voice of Sam Witwer was cool, but then him just basically turning into dust. It's like, you had so many things you could have done with that. I want more for Republic Commando. I want more for The Force Unleashed. In regards to how they get utilized in shows, TVs, or movies.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going, this is like sort of my own soapbox. Like, being someone who I feel like I grew up on those Republic Commando novels, and spoiler, Republic Commando is my number one Star Wars video game. But having grown up on those books, I love that we have the Bad Batch, because essentially the Bad Batch is my three seasons of Republic Commando light, at least insofar as let's spend some time with a group of clones who are going to have their individual personalities. Yet, I think though we've already moved on now, or we've, you know, in air quotes, moved on from the Clone Wars era, I still want to go back and it's like, well, can't we tell the story of the Republic Commandos, the OG Republic Commandos? And, you know, maybe unlike the Bad Batch, they're given less freedom, and maybe they're more subjugated by the Republic and then the Empire. Maybe there's a story to tell there. And likewise,
I think there is.
Yeah. Likewise, it just kills me that Sam Witwer is there. Sam Witwer exists. He is here.
And tell me he's not behind the curtain going, all right, guys, is it time yet? Can I? And Dave's like, we're not ready yet. Just be patient, right? Like, they have to be having these conversations somehow.
It does kill me. And I want to do a little deep dive for a second, listeners. But, you know, Sam Witwer was also part of another mega franchise, The Walking Dead. Very long story short, but Sam Witwer had essentially like a one episode role in the premiere of The Walking Dead back in 2010. He was supposed to be a walker, just a zombie. Yet the plan was to do a whole backstory series of webisodes that could have maybe come back into the show on cable involving Sam Witwer. That's why you bring in an actor and you just have him in the background as a zombie. And the poor guy never even had that happen for him. Things changed behind the scenes. AMC was like, nope, we're not doing this little side project anymore. And meanwhile, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're going to turn on The Walking Dead season one, episode one. You're going to see Sam Witwer and have a moment of confusion. Like, how exactly is someone who's so important to Star Wars just there in the background of The Walking Dead? It kind of kills me for this guy. Like, I want him to have that moment where we see him on screen, especially in live action, like almost as a thank you for the last 20 years of contributions.
Right. And again, them making the decision back in, I want to say 2014, 15, had to be in there. Maybe it was sooner. For them to bring back Darth Maul the way they did, and for them to ask Sam to be the voice, like, that's great. Don't get me wrong. And that's a big deal, because they used Maul perfectly. I still want Starkiller. Right?
Yeah.
I still want Starkiller. Like, all credit, all flowers given to Sam Witwer for his ability to portray the Emperor, his ability to portray Maul and be just a great voice actor for them. Give me Starkiller.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and again, like, this man has been around for 20 years with Star Wars, and thankfully, you know, or almost 20 years. Yeah. You know, thankfully I'm thinking about how The Force Unleashed came out in 2008. And like we said, that coincided with the Clone Wars. So, you know, look at that little bit of like Sam Witwer kind of having that Lucas connection just as much as Dave Filoni does. Let me give you my top five real quick and we'll kind of close it out from there. I'm kind of glad four of my five don't overlap with yours. So, you know, the fifth on my list is Shadows of the Empire from 1996. I played that on N64, and man, that game I just played to completion and again and again and again. That had such playability for a game that if someone was to turn on today, they may not think it has any playability. But goodness, that there is nostalgia in that game. That for me was like the first big expanded universe experience, because you had Shadows of the Empire as a comic book, as a novel, and as a game. You know, to this day, 20 years later of like playing that game and beyond, I still haven't read the book because the game itself was so engaging. And then from there, I went from Shadows in 96 to Rogue Squadron in 98. I mean, who wasn't playing Star Wars video games in the 90s that didn't touch Rogue Squadron at some point? Though for me, my third game is actually one that you didn't have a lot of experience with. And we did get into this on our RIP Riverside podcast episode, but that would be Bounty Hunter from 2002. So the Jango Fett game. I mean, I can't say enough of about this game. It probably should have an episode of its own, but that game was like prototypical let's go explore the Mando culture. Like, dude, I wanted the Jango Fett Mando helmet. I wanted the Hasbro or Mattel Jango Fett pistols. Like, I was ready. I was you describing being all in when you saw Darth Maul's lightsabers. That was me when I saw Jango Fett in episode 2. And trust me, I was already all in on the experience for all of Star Wars. Oh, yeah. But Jango Fett just unlocked something in me. And that Bounty Hunter game just ran away with me.
And before you jump to 2 and 1, I must say,
yeah,
and this is to Star Wars and then also probably to your credit, and I don't want you to jump down a rabbit hole unless you want to. Y'all canceling 1313 hurt.
Yes, man. Yes.
It hurt my soul because that game was, I think if I remember, it was supposed to be out about Boba climbing the ranks, but specifically on Coruscant, and then doing some other bounty hunter tasks. So we got to this legend of who Boba Fett was. And I just want to say to LucasArts and whoever decided to cancel this, you made me sad and it hurt.
Oh my goodness. And it was the will they, won't they for years. And, you know, kind of lending itself to the discussion we've already been having. I feel like, cause the game was 1313, right?
Yeah, that was like 1313 was literally the title of the game. And they're like, and we canceled it. And we're like, why?
Yeah. Why? And especially at a time where the gaming technology had advanced so far. Like, I remember this is really when we're at the next gen console discussion, because we already have The Force Unleashed and we may already have The Force Unleashed 2 at this point. But we were ready as Star Wars fans for like the next big gaming development to run through Star Wars. And maybe it would have been 1313 or maybe not. Like, I don't want to give it too much credit or raise the stakes on that game that never came out, will never come out. But I 1313.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just about to say, I certainly remember 1313 feeling like it was going to combine the aesthetic of The Force Unleashed and how advanced that had become with a character that I loved in Boba Fett, you know?
And I think 1313 unfortunately sealed the deal for LucasArts being the beginning of the end of cancellations.
Yeah, because I'm assuming 1313 must have been between that 2008 to 12 range. I think after 2012, LucasArts was just done.
I mean, it was the game that broke the dam, if you think about it. Like, Lucasfilm or LucasArts and stuff was doing okay. Wasn't doing great, but they were doing okay. And then all of a sudden it was 1313's canceled. The Force Unleashed 3, which was a possibility, is now canceled. Republic Commando 2, which has kind of been on the back burner, maybe, maybe not, is canceled. And it was like cancellation, cancellation, cancellation. And then studio closed. But 1313 was the game that kind of broke its back, because They had gameplay. They had somewhat of a trailer. They had an idea, and then it disappeared one day.
I know. I'm sitting here thinking, like, you could be at a celebration convention, and, like, 1313 is, like, it's not, you could just mention it at a table of people, and they sound like they're just old veterans, like, talking about a war. 1313. Yeah.
And it's, and if I remember correctly, too, they were ready to go for E3. Like, the year they had it, they had E3 stuff ready and a booth ready, and then they got canned.
Yeah, it kills me to think, like, there's still probably some gameplay or early gameplay type footage on YouTube. And I think
some guy is sitting in his basement right now who was a maker of it and is like, I still have access to the full game, man, and playing it. And we're all like,
yeah,
dude, share.
I know. And there's probably some props that were made to go along with, like, merchandising for it. And who knows what else that, like, we'll never really see the light of day until, like, you know, it's no longer somehow intellectual property. Right. Well, hey, to carry it on from there, to get to my number one and number two. Number two is OG Battlefront, the original Battlefront, 2004. Back on Xbox. And again, like, you can kind of tell my gaming experience is really, like, mid to late 90s into the first decade of the 2000s. So I really had such an interesting gaming experience going from, you know, the limitations of a Shadows of the Empire in 96 to what must have felt like no restrictions whatsoever with games like Battlefront and then Battlefront 2 in consecutive years. So, again, Star Wars fans, if you're picking up a Star Wars video game for the first time in the 2020s, just take the historical deep dive on YouTube, because you won't be disappointed seeing the progression of games from the 90s into the 2000s and beyond. But again, just seeing, like, the limits, yet the playability that were imposed on the gameplay and the players back during those periods. And number one, we spoiled it a couple times already, but Republic Commando. You know, 2002, I believe that game was. No, 2005, actually, according to my notes.
Yeah, 2005. It was the same year. I looked this up just as we were talking, but it's Republic Commando came out the same year that the movie Revenge of the Sith came out. It was March 1st, 2005, and the movie, I want to say, was like April of the same year.
Yeah, and this all, you know, this all really syncs up to me, because I feel bad. Like, I didn't even put the Revenge of the Sith game into my honorable mentions.
May 19th, 05 was Revenge of the Sith. March 1st, 2005 was Republic Commando.
Yeah, what a gaming experience. I know, so I can tell, like, again, Star Wars games were high on my mind back then, because I would have had Battlefront 1, Battlefront 2, Republic Commando. I still had an N64, so as needed, I'm plugging in, you know, Rogue Squadron, the Racer. I'm plugging in the GameCube to get some Bounty Hunter. Like, the wealth of different console devices. I mean, that it was Nirvana for me. That if I could go back to that, I would be happy for a presumptive or just all around Star Wars gaming experience.
And rumor has it, sorry, before you
no go ahead
speak, rumor has it, and I pray this is true, that there may be a reworking or a remaking of Republic Commando that some individual fan is working on graphics and updated controls to try and revamp it.
Well, you know what? Let's close this episode on Star Wars video games on this a little bit. So tell me, what is the potential with that? Is that something that would be an experience that folks like you and I and the listeners, are we going to experience that on YouTube, seeing, like, the finished results of this person's product? Or might this be something that people are able to engage with through, you know, an emulator or something like you were talking about earlier?
My genuine hope is that we get to engage with it. But for me, I think, on the surface, it'll probably be something we just get to watch and see. But this has always kind of been my opinion on games, whether they're the Star Wars, the Lord of the Rings, or other such games. And I don't know why more game companies don't just think about this, because I don't think it's running out of ideas for you to say, hey, you know that game that everyone freaking loved from the early 2000s? What if we made the graphics better and we updated some of the combat and just re-released that, how much more money they would make than just making something completely brand new. Like, don't get me wrong, Jedi Survivor and Jedi Fallen Order are great games. And I think they do a great job of doing justice to the new system of like playing and also just graphics. But it's the same similar combat style and movements to our games like Jedi Knight and Jedi Outcast. And I want something like that.
It's interesting that you say that because, you know, we're an hour into our conversation and I don't think either of us intentionally have avoided bringing up Jedi Fallen Order or Survivor because those are incredible gaming experiences, but you just nailed it. If you've been playing Star Wars video games long enough, you've likely had a commiserate enough experience in the past and so far into the past, it might have been the 90s. Which is to say, I'm so happy that video game players today are having the experience of Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor because my brain would have been melted beyond recognition as a kid in the 90s if I had that at my disposal. But again, to your point, it is similar mechanics, if not in execution, at least conceptually, to what was going on with the Jedi Academy games, what was going on with The Force Unleashed. Because I certainly think about The Force Unleashed a lot when Jedi Fallen Order comes to mind. And again, that is meant to be a compliment both ways. Because I just don't think you get, I don't think you get Jedi Fallen Order without The Force Unleashed. And I think Jedi Fallen Order is such an incredible experience. Some people have forgotten about The Force Unleashed.
And I think it's like the, I saw a creator, I wish I remember their name because I like giving credit to those who make things, but I saw a thing on Instagram and they're going through like games of today and they go to some of the Star Wars games and it's the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he goes, whoa, whoa, and he snaps and he looks at the TV and he puts Survivor next to Jedi Outcast. And he's like, this is literally the same movements. This is literally some of the same combat style to a degree. And the graphics just look better. And I'm, again, this is not a disrespect. That tells you how good a game is when it can transcend time and have aspects out of it in a new version of a game. I am just of the personal opinion that if a game is really good, like a Republic Commando or such, just remake it, remodel it, or do whatever you need to make the graphics look a little better and re-release it.
Bro, I'm just thinking about like the poster. I'm just thinking about how cool like a re-release poster would be for Republic Commando in 2024 or 2025. Like just seeing, you know, taking the OG image of it, but throwing like the 2020 remaster against it. Oh
my God. I don't know what I would do if it became a reality that like, and I'm telling you, this has happened only two or three times in my life where I've said, you know, what if this happened? And then it does. I'm knocking on wood and Disney, I want to make sure that I trademark this before you do it. But it would be wonderful as if at E3, it's really dark and a trailer comes on. It's like this year's Star Wars game for 2025, 20th anniversary, by the way. And it's freaking Republic Commando playthrough and it's like very Call of Duty-esque, but it's you're like on Kashyyyk and you're going through and it's like Trandomex and you shoot them and it's just them going through one of the levels as a playthrough and they're like coming in 2025 for its 20th anniversary Republic Commando. I would be beside myself. I'd be so happy.
It would be, for me, it would be the experience that folks had with the Battlefront re-release earlier this year or at the tail end of last year. I don't mean, here's the thing. That's how quickly that passed over me because as much as I love Battlefront, it wasn't Republic Commando for me. But I understand for other folks, Republic Commando wasn't what Battlefront was to them. So correct. I'm looking for that big celebration. Like that's what I would want. And, you know, and I think for you, you'd get that from KOTOR because I know they talk about remasters for that. And that, you know, depending on the day, you don't know what's happening.
Listen, them talking about remastering KOTOR is like them trying to release Skeleton Crew information. Love you, Wade.
I know. I feel like I shouldn't have brought up the KOTOR remaster so late into the convo.
No, I'm glad you did, because honestly, at this point, I'm like cautiously optimistic. That's how I feel about a KOTOR remake. I'm cautiously optimistic because I know better than to be like, yes, this is going to be awesome, for them to turn around and be like, we're not doing it anymore. Right?
That's just where I'm at. Yeah, I know. And I think that's where we are, Star Wars fans, which, again, that should be a discussion you and I can tackle on a different day. But both with movies, because we see this with, you know, the Rian Johnson trilogy. I'm trying to think. What was one of the other things that was kind of pulled? Rangers of the New Republic. Like, I think, unfortunately, we're at a point where we grew up and Star Wars sometimes was slow to come out. And then it would be like the avalanche with the games, the prequel trilogy, then the Clone Wars animated series, etc. And we were so used to just having everything we wanted that now when the rug gets pulled out from under us, whether it's a 1313 or a Republic Commando 2, let alone a remaster, or a KOTOR remaster, I think for video game fans, it's what the movie fans are feeling when the Rian Johnson trilogy is happening and then it's not, or the live action series fans are feeling when Rangers of the Republic is a show that's coming out and then it's not, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, for me personally on that, this sounds really mean. I'm sorry, Star Wars fans, but I was like, good, you should feel this. It hurts. It hurts to be told that something is canceled. And as a video game fan for Star Wars and watching Star Wars things come out like in drones and sometimes super slowly, then to get things canceled and people be like, oh, why did that get canceled? And you're like the guy sitting at the bar, like, come over here, have a drink with me. Son, this is not a new occurrence. This has been happening for a while now, right?
And, like, and that's
that guy.
That's just what we said, because that's the convention where it's a group of veterans around the table saying 1313.
Right.
Just nodding your head.
To be like, have a drink and enjoy the fact that we have some Star Wars content. Is it everything that we want? Not always. That's how I feel about Acolyte, actually. Well, major circle back. We got Star Wars stuff. Is it Old Republic like I would like? No, but it's something new and it's something kind of cool that they're introducing, with hopefully opens the door for more things to come. And you have to kind of take Star Wars at that. Like, it's not always going to be tailored to what exactly we want. It's still going to be really freaking cool.
That's a good note to end on.
I would say so.
That's a great note. That's a great note, listeners. So we're going to do it. We're going to end it right there. That's it. That's the conversation. This has been Star Wars video games. I feel like this is the second time we've had this conversation, but we could probably have it a third, fourth, and a fifth time. So, you know, listeners, I want the feedback. Dylan wants the feedback. Wade, Kevin, we want the feedback. You know, let us know on Facebook, wherever you're connected with us. Like, please, if you've listened to this episode, we want to hear what you're thinking about it. Have you played Star Wars video games? Will you play a Star Wars video game after listening to this? Where are you, you know, with your console life? Is this something that you can keep up with? You know, we love feedback. Frankly, I think this was a really fun conversation. Dylan, I hope you enjoyed it. But until next time, fans, that's going to be my sign off. Dylan, do you have any last words?
Yeah, I would say for me, my last words kind of pertain to everything we've talked about, trying to wrap the bow on it. Star Wars games, at the end of the day, are the same with the films and everything else, right? Star Wars is Star Wars. And I think when we get something, instead of being so quick to judge it or being so quick to say, oh, look at this political bias or other that, and I don't want to get in the weeds of that, but so quick to be upset, just take it for what it is, be a part of it. And if you want to write your opinion later, do that, but just let Star Wars be Star Wars. Just let it be Star Wars.
Let it be Star Wars. All right, Records of the Republic fans, we'll see you next time. For Kevin and Wade, for all of us, that is it. It's 3:31. It's June 6th, Thursday. The NBA Finals are tonight. Go tune in, folks. We'll see you later.
Thanks, guys.